This is The Blinding Lights, a Star Wars prequel-era fanfic written by Skyrunner and read by Rena Jenkins. This story is rated PG-13 and is Gen, with additional tags for major character death, Mace POV, POV third person, present tense, canon compliant, and that is a warning, Shatterpoint's force ability, headaches and migraines, angst, hurt comfort, canonical character death, some humor, disability, not beta red, featuring chompy toddler Ahsoka, secretly gossipy Luminara, amateur chef Shaak, well-meaning but meddling Jedi family, bog goblin Yoda, Obi-Wan, I'd sell sand to a Tusken Kenobi, and Skeeve Palpatine. Inversion of traditional light-dark imagery. Courtesy of light-triggered migraines. Seriously, did I mention this is canon-compliant and goes through the beginning of Order 66? There's fluff, but the end will still hurt. Jedi as found family. Canon complicit. Summary. Mace sees Shatterpoints, manifestations of key moments and choices, as shards of light. Sometimes this quirk of the Force triggers migraines for the Master Jedi, but he manages. Until the day Anakin arrives at the temple and becomes the brightest light in Mace's life. Author's notes. For that gay Jedi. Did I forget that Order 66 didn't trigger until after Palps murders Mace? Yes, I did! Am I going to change the ending to reflect that? No, I am not! Also, seriously, this ends with Mace dying if you somehow missed the tags and warnings. Little Soka. No, not that way. Mace lifts his hand, just enough to peek out underneath his fingers, and sees an infant Togruta sprint into his favorite grotto in the Room of 1,000 Fountains. She looks up at him with wide eyes and a wider smile, her first set of strong canines on proud display. They glint brightly, light stabbing his eyes even in this dark cave, and he realizes it's yet another Shatterpoint. With a disgruntled groan, he drops the hand back over his eyes. Plo, he calls out flatly. She's in here. He hears Plo shuffle to the entrance of the grotto, but doesn't greet him, hoping he'll grab the errant youngling and be on their way without conversation. Come, Soka, Plo coaxes her. Let's leave Master Windu to his meditation. Mace snorts. Meditation. He wishes he could meditate, instead of crawling into the nearest dark hole whenever a migraine raises its ugly head. He had plans today. Commitments. Now where is he? Not at Dex's diner with Deepa, that's for damn sure. Windu! The toddler shouts. Mace flinches at her sharp pitch, but not nearly as much as when the toddler launches herself onto him, crawling in his lap and curling into his chest. Plo, he grits out. Soka, Master Windu is hurting. We need to be quiet. He feels her twist in his lap, still not willing to open his eyes. Windu, she attempts to whisper. You hurt? Yes. It's brusque, but it's the most politeness he can muster in this state. Oh. Her breath ghosts over his face. The smell of her most recent meal. Raw fish? Making him want to gag. What he'd give for a greasy Shaak burger right now. What he'd give to want one right now, instead of feeling queasy at every scent that wafts by him. He blames Qui-Gon for this. Who else could manage to find a youngling with so many shatter points that Mace can't see his face for the light? In the Outer Rim, no less. Young Skywalker is so bright, he could be Tatooine's little-known third son. Two pinpricks of pain startle him back to present, and he yelps, jerking his eyes open to find the Togruta toddler sinking her teeth into his shoulder. Soka! Plo leaps forward and scoops her off of Mace.
She bit me,
he says, more shocked than offended, rubbing his shoulder to assuage the already fading pain.
Yes,
Plo says nervously, settling the toddler on his hip and bouncing her unconsciously. Togruten's social ritual for calming each other. Quite sweet, really, but,
you should probably go to medical soon. Before the venom sets in. Before what?
Togrutans have a paralytic venom that they transfer through bites.
I don't think it's deadly to humans, but I don't think that's a risk you should take.
Feel better, the youngling says brightly, her fangs no longer gleaming with a shatter point.
Small comforts.
Mace's evasion from the lightsaber training course does not last long. Luminara corners him almost immediately, his alcove refuge becoming a shallow cage. With her hands behind her back, posture rigid and eyes steel, he wonders if she even needs to use force suggestion to still younglings.
She certainly doesn't need it for him.
Master Windu, she enunciates crisply. I thought you were the only qualified instructor for Jem So. Is there not a class ongoing this very moment?
There is,
he edges.
Unfortunately, I will not be able to teach today.
She does not relent. Padawan Afi will be most disappointed that her training is incomplete. As will I.
He can feel sweat beating on his neck, so he offers up his time as sacrifice. I can augment her education with tutoring sessions if she'd like.
And the other Padawans?
I can offer the same to them. Most won't ask. His Jem So lessons are little more than exhibitions.
Even Skywalker? Luminara asks shrewdly.
Mace grimaces.
She's silent for a moment, and when she does speak, it's soft and quiet and punches him in the gut. I'm disappointed in you, Mace. I never thought you'd allow your personal dislike for someone to interfere with your duties to them.
Dislike?
He repeats, equal parts hurt and offended.
I don't dislike Skywalker. He's one of our most prodigious Padawans. He's single-handedly reduced our droid maintenance costs by half. I harbor no ill will for him.
So he is not the reason you're hiding in an alcove? She presses.
He is, but not because I dislike him.
She brings her hands in front of her and clasps them firmly, lifting her chin and looking down her nose challengingly, even though Mace has at least a foot of height over her. That's not what he believes.
He's told you?
He asks skeptically. Not that she'd lie to him, but that's not something a Padawan would casually mention to peers, let alone masters. No, Barriss did. He's noticed the way you scowl at him.
So has his entire cohort. He scrunches his brow and frowns. I scowl.
You're doing it now, Mace.
I'm just thinking. But he forcibly relaxes his expression anyway.
Then you often think in Skywalker's direction. With narrowed eyes.
I squint at him, he grumbles. It's like looking at a floodlight.
Luminara's face softens with sympathy.
Still?
He sighs.
Always.
Would sun goggles help? She asks. The cave clans of my home planet always wore them on their trips to the surface.
He gives her a flat look. It's not literal light. It's just the way I perceive shatter points. Even if I wore sun goggles, which I'm not, that's ridiculous, it wouldn't dim shatter points.
Luminara hums thoughtfully. Then there is no use in concealing the extent of his shatter points. It must become public knowledge in the temple.
I don't think so,
Mace scoffs.
No one is entitled to that information. Besides, it's not pleasant knowing your choices carry that much weight. We'd be doing Anakin no favors.
And permitting him to believe a high-ranking Jedi Master hates him is a favor?
Mace frowns again, then curses under his breath and wrangles his features into a more neutral expression.
Mace, she says pleadingly, he needs support. He needs to feel supported. Is it better to face a mountain alone or with friends?
It's better to not know the mountain's there.
Far too late for that, she says dryly. Qui-Gon saw to it with his Chosen One stories.
She has him there. He doesn't need me to practically confirm it for him. I'll work harder to treat Anakin more equitably, but I ask that you continue to respect my wishes regarding shatter points.
Very well, Luminara eventually concedes. I shall not inform Anakin.
Or Barriss, he says, feeling vindicated when Luminara huffs with irritation. Or any of his peers.
As you wish, Mace.
It's not until Shaak-Ti practically pounces on him in a training cell that he realizes his mistake. He hadn't said anything about their peers. I heard you get migraines, she shouts. Shaak!
He looks around the cell to see if anyone's heard, but luckily no one else has wandered through in hours.
Oh, sorry, I'll be quieter, she says, at the exact same volume. Have you tried eating more omega-3? He rolls his eyes. Not to Shaak's face, of course, but he does.
My diet has nothing to do with it.
She nods exuberantly, Leku bouncing with the movement.
Maybe, maybe not. Can't hurt to try, right?
I'll bring it up with my healer, he says noncommittally.
Shaak waves her hand in the air dismissively.
Eh, you don't need a healer for this. You can just up your intake and see if it helps.
He eyes her shrewdly.
Let me guess. This involves trying your latest fish recipe.
No, of course not. She beams at him. Just this side of two wide, sharp carnivore teeth gleaming ominously.
Shaak never did quite get the hang of human-styled smiles, despite all of Luminara's cultural classes.
He waits.
But if you wanted, she breaks, excitement overruling patience, I am experimenting with a new dish. Get this. Humans can eat raw fish, So you actually skipped the last one for no reason.
Damn it, there goes his best excuse.
I just have to make sure the fish is fresh and I prepare it right. So what do you say? Dinner with me and Lumi?
Shock.
Yes?
I hate fish.
So?
He heaves a sigh.
I'll bring a salad.
Ew.
She wrinkles her nose. Then her eyes widen guiltily.
I mean, you are the best. I'm going to tell Lumi. See you later, Macy.
Mace laughs as she sprints away. Shuck means well, at least.
He supposes he can excuse her for trying to help. If he can forgive her cooking, he can forgive anything.
After that, though, it seems like everyone wants to help Mace overcome his migraines, no matter the much more mundane headaches they give him in the process.
I'm satisfied with my current exercise routine. Thanks.
He tells Master Drawleg, declining yet another offer to spar.
I'm glad it's helped you with your ability.
He gently rebuffs Ayla.
But colored lenses don't change anything for me.
Madam New, please don't scour the archives for my sake. I already did the research when I first learned of my ability. My bibliography.
Let me just go, find it.
Thanks, Kit. But I'm pretty sure I'd drown trying that.
No, Quinlan.
I don't think that... Mace blinks rapidly, completely bewildered.
I don't think an orgy would fix anything, Master Mundy. But, thanks for the invite.
Master Peel, alcohol is not a solution.
No puns!
Acupuncture is out of the question, Sazy.
No, Quinlan.
I suppose I can't reject a gift offered freely, Master Poof, but you really didn't have to hand make a blanket for me.
Wait, sorry. You used your own fur?
Stas, lighting up won't... He stops. Thinks it over.
Actually, sure. The usual hookah lounge?
Quinlan! No! The Kaffar quickly closes his robes again, though he maintains an innocent expression.
Your laws, Mace.
He drags a hand over his face.
Do not bring death sticks on temple grounds again. Quinlan, I swear...
But Quinlan is already gone. Mace practically growls in irritation.
Everything okay, Master?
He turns, then practically smacks himself in the face in his haste to cover his eyes from the light. It doesn't save him, of course, and the migraine explodes behind his eyes instantly.
Skywalker,
he greets with a grunt.
Hello.
Hello? Anakin returns, sounding distinctly put off. Mace knows he's not meant to hear the whispered, rude.
Yeah,
he supposes it is rude without context.
My apologies, Knight Skywalker. I seem to have a migraine.
Anakin doesn't respond. Mace waits several beats, but the continued silence makes him wonder if Anakin's already left. Tentatively, he removes his hand and peeks open his eyes.
They immediately water in pain.
Oh, Anakin says, with genuine surprise.
I guess you are. Sorry, I thought you were calling me a migraine.
Guilt ripples through him, but there's nothing for it.
Is there anything I can do? Anakin asks hesitantly. To help? The migraine pulses, and he frowns sourly. I already have a doctor, thanks.
I meant, like, can you see? If it feels better to keep your eyes closed, I can walk you to wherever you want to go.
Oh. That's very thoughtful of you.
Mace shifts his weight between his feet, trying to compensate for feeling so off balance.
It is thoughtful. Instead of a harebrained scheme to make his migraines go away like all his peers are throwing at him, Anakin is simply offering to support him through it.
That's... well, it's nice.
Even if his skull is splitting in half.
Sure, I guess, Anakin says uncomfortably. We did it for anyone who got sunstruck.
Right. Desert planet. Two bright suns. Even beings who aren't usually sensitive probably experience light-triggered migraines on that sandpit. On Tatooine, it's just a fact of life. Something accepted. Something easily accommodated. I'd appreciate it if you could guide me to my quarters.
Sure. Follow me.
Irritation flares to life again. He opens his mouth to waspishly ask, "How am I supposed to do that?" But Anakin takes no pause, gives no opportunity to speak. At first, that's even more annoying. He's never taken Anakin as self-absorbed, but the knight barely takes the time to breathe while he chatters away. The topics are erratic. He jumps from one to another, seemingly as the ideas form in his mind, and they are ceaseless.
But his voice is steady.
That's how Mace figures it out.
Anakin's leading him by sound, he realizes, as he instinctively turns the corner to follow the direction of his monologue on historical circuitry developments for astromechs.
No need to touch, to hold, or give directions. Anakin's voice isn't just steady. It's calm and unobtrusive and smooth. Monotone, almost. It doesn't help his migraine, but neither does it worsen it. There's no gap in conversation, and therefore no gap in guidance. There's also no expectation of participation. And Mace suspects that Anakin doesn't even expect him to process the words he's saying. Why else would he be waxing poetic about a Naboo senator? He almost regrets that their time is over by the time Anakin finally stops talking, intuitively knowing that it means they've arrived at his door. If he wasn't worried about passing out from pain in the next 90 seconds... he'd even invite Anakin for tea. Another wave of nausea rolls over him, affirming his decision to collapse in bed as soon as possible. Thank you, Anakin,
he manages to mumble.
Be well, Master.
There's a swish of robes, and Mace knows Anakin has left.
How ironic that the person who is the least obnoxious about his migraines is the one who causes them. What is this?
Mace asks, staring dubiously at the satchel in his palm.
Tea it is,
Master Yoda claims.
Endure great suffering in the service of the Order you do. They all suffer in the service of the Order these days. The casualty reports teach them that, if nothing else. But he doesn't want to dwell on that. It's the first time his rest at the temple has coincided with Master Yoda's in months.
Mace brings the tea satchel to his nose for a sniff,
and decides the scent is best described as corpse in a bog.
And you're adding to my suffering because...
He yelps when Master Yoda whacks his shins with his gimmer staff.
Ungrateful, do not be. This blend possesses strong medicinal properties.
Medicinal? Mace groans with sudden understanding.
Oh, not you too.
Swore at Skywalker out loud in the last meeting you did.
The mere mention of Anakin sends a shooting pain through his skull, but it's a dull, reflexive association, rather than the true beginning of another migraine. Mace still rubs at his temple.
They're getting worse. Even holocalls don't dim his shatter points anymore. These days, Mace suspects Anakin is brighter than everyone else in the temple combined.
I did, he agrees ruefully. I'll have to apologize.
Preferably in writing.
At a distance, with no return address.
Shouldn't be too hard with him deployed on the other side of the galaxy.
Master Yoda humphs approvingly.
A good idea, that is.
He starts shuffling away with the barest wave as a goodbye.
Enjoy the tea.
Mace frowns at the satchel still in his hand, but after some consideration, he smiles.
After all, gifts are an appropriate form of apology.
What was in that tea you sent Anakin? He lost his sense of taste for a week.
Mace looks up from his meal to see Obi-Wan grinning rakishly at him. He tenses, eyes darting around the dining room, but there's no sign of Obi-Wan's shadow.
He's not here, Mace,
Obi-Wan assures him as he takes the seat across the table.
I wouldn't do that to you.
Mace relaxes and tears off another piece of bread.
Yes, you would. You have, actually. Repeatedly.
That was before I knew about your migraines, he protests.
Bant's birthday.
The Festival of Hirosene.
He dips the bread in his soup.
Pakeen's lecture.
That was before I knew Anakin triggers your migraines.
The last three knighting ceremonies.
Knighting ceremonies are mandatory. I can't help that.
Mace chews the bread, watching Obi-Wan consideringly. He looks very smug. He swallows deliberately before delivering the final indictment.
Sabacc Knight.
Obi-Wan opens his mouth automatically to counter, but hesitates a moment too long, his eyes widening as he processes the accusation. Then he snaps his mouth closed, and his ears flame redder than his hair. Mace throws a small piece of bread at him.
I knew you did it on purpose, you cheat!
The window for challenging the winner is closed,
Obi-Wan says hurriedly, arms raised to ward off the hail of breadcrumbs.
Comlinks were banned. How did you get him to show up just as I pulled a good hand?
Obi-Wan forgets his mask of contrition, grinning without shame.
Oh, that was pure luck. I hate you so much.
Master Mace!
Obi-Wan mock gasps.
Such enmity! Is that really appropriate for a Jedi? You must release such anger.
Mace snorts.
As soon as you release my share of the winnings.
Well, as they say, anger keeps you warm at night.
Do they say that?
Anakin does. Obi-Wan strokes his beard.
I think it's a Tatooine saying.
Ah. Such a sentiment would be important in freezing desert nights. He wonders if it's a sentiment unique to Tatooine's slave culture, or if those who can afford warming stoves also know its value. Obi-Wan tends to avoid discussing that planet, that period of his life, but Mace knows why he'd bring it up. Why he's here at all, instead of Dex's diner. He keeps his eyes on his soup for Obi-Wan's sake, stirring it unnecessarily as he broaches the topic. I understand you had a run-in with Zygarians recently. How is Anakin?
He's better than I would have expected, Obi-Wan says haltingly.
Mace nods. How are you? Mace looks up when Obi-Wan fails to elaborate. The other master is slightly hunched in his seat, snaking his arms into the sleeves of his robes as if to ward off a chill. It takes several more false starts before Obi-Wan can finally finish his sentence.
Worse than I would have expected.
Even temporary enslavement is enslavement, Mace says gently, knowingly. It's no small thing to experience. It certainly changes the way you see the galaxy. Obi-Wan's head bobs, but Mace suspects it's an automatic response rather than enthusiastic agreement.
It's not me being enslaved what's bothering me. I mean, it was everyone else. Seeing them on equal ground, if that makes sense.
It does. Most Jedi that frequent field missions end up directly experiencing slavery in some form sooner or later. It might be the nature of the Force to guide them to the people that need them most. Or maybe that's simply how cruel the galaxy is. It's inevitable, almost. There even used to be a master that met with Jedi returning from such experiences to guide them through the emotions and perspective. It's a shame Obi-Wan won't benefit from Zier wisdom. She died on Geonosis.
I no longer wonder why Anakin has difficulty with anger and fear, Obi-Wan admits. Now I wonder how he isn't consumed with it. To be born into that? For that to be all you know for the first decade of your life? I don't know how he's moved past it.
It's unlikely that he has. Obi-Wan bristles.
Now, I know he had some rough moments growing up, and this war was straining all of us, but...
Peace. Mace cuts him off. That's not how I meant it.
Obi-Wan puffs up with unexpressed outrage,
but then he deflates with a forceful exhale of air. He nods.
Please, explain.
Mace considers his soup. Ultimately, he pushes the whole bowl aside, appetite dulled.
Experiences like enslavement don't heal neatly, he says. At best, it leaves a scar. At worst, the effects are more severe, more significant.
He can see suspicion building in Obi-Wan's expression again, so he's quick to reassure.
That's not a condemnation. It's far from impossible to live well after the fact, but you will live differently. It's something that will always be a part of your experience, something you have to move around and compensate for. You'll have to adapt to it.
Obi-Wan is silent. He sits rigidly on the bench, and the longer he goes without speaking, the greater Mace's worry for him grows.
It sounds like death, then,
Obi-Wan says, with a rasp in his throat.
Sounds like grief. Like ghosts.
Mace doesn't think so. But he doesn't have the same relationship with death that Obi-Wan does. Death to him is the ultimate promise. The embrace of the Force at the end of a life well served. He's not eager for it, by no means. But to him, it's a neutral law, like gravity. What goes up comes down. What lives dies. Even this hellish war hasn't changed that sentiment. Not much. It might, eventually. He knows it's possible. He's sitting across from a living example. Obi-Wan hasn't had the privilege of viewing death as a comfort in a long time. Mace honestly doesn't know if the other man's ever had the privilege. But if he did, it died with Qui-Gon. It bled out in the arena of Geonosis at the start of this war. It gasped its last with Mandalore's Duchess. Maybe it is like grief, Mace acknowledges. Maybe it is grief for the lives people could have led. Maybe it is, Obi-Wan agrees, eyes unfocused, fixed on a distant point. A distant time, perhaps. Maybe it is. Mace is shivering. He is soaked with sweat, but only a small fraction is from exertion. His saber arm shakes, the purple blade humming along with the minute movements. An elderly man in fine clothing cowers at the end of it, screeching for mercy. The Chancellor. The head of the Republic. The Sith. Palpatine. Behind him, Aegon Kolar, Kit Fisto, and Sae-See Teen lie lifeless on the floor. Beyond him, beyond Coruscant, scattered through the stars and across the galaxy, more Jedi are winking out of existence in droves. Each death is another stab, another gut punch, another weight to carry for the rest of his life. He takes a shuddering breath as another Jedi falls, and he wonders who it is. Wonders who's left to survive, even as the perpetrator whimpers at the point of his blade. How many Sith are out there? Is Palpatine the end of the trail of hints they've been following, or only the beginning? They have to arrest him. They have to investigate. They have to know. He tells the Sith as much. He thinks. He's only partially there, heart and soul keening for the hundreds and hundreds falling through death's curtain. Anakin arrives at the worst time. The ache of mourning drowns in a violent flood of pain, and he gasps, half expecting to inhale water. Of course, there isn't any. There is only light. Is it exhaustion that's making Anakin appear brighter than ever? Even without looking at him, his migraine pounds, and he can hardly see the Sith in front of him for the radiance flooding the chamber. He wards Anakin off with a raised hand, unable to bear the proximity. He can hardly concentrate on the conversation between them through such scalding light and pain. It takes so much focus. But he gets the sense that Anakin is confused, overwhelmed. Then he's overwhelmed. Mace fights off the Sith lightning, manages to deflect it even. He shouldn't be able to. Shouldn't be able to even see the hissing bolts. but they're little more than dark electric shadows compared to the all-encompassing light of Anakin's shatterpoints. Shatterpoints so numerous, so strong, and all so tightly convening on Anakin that they're blinding to look at. Incandescent light blotting out the face behind it. Darker ripples roil behind and between the shatterpoints constantly, the effect of others' choices closing potential shatterpoints, but no sooner do they appear than they are replaced by another spike of light. Another future, another possibility, another choice, another shatterpoint, and always, always centered on Anakin. The lightning stops. His ears are ringing. He wants to vomit. Anakin's yelling at him. Why? Wants to save Palpatine for trial? Trial! For a man who literally controls the Republic. There can be no trial. Even if there is, there can be no justice. Not for this. Not for them. Palpatine is one death he won't regret carrying. He pulls back his saber arm and swings. Screams! His hand is gone, and his world goes dark with pain, with despair. No. Wait, no, no! It is dark. He looks around, wildly, terrified, eyes struggling to adjust to the abrupt absence of light. He finds Skywalker and sees him for the first time. Only once or twice, when Anakin was still a child, did the shatterpoint settle enough for Mace to glimpse a curl of hair, a boyish smile, a joy-crinkled eye. That is not what he finds now. His hair does curl, but it frames a face with only traces of the youth it's meant to show, the rest prematurely aged with the gauntness of war. His eyes do crinkle, but only in agony, only in shadows, pulled and wrinkled by utter despair. There is no smile to compare. Mace can't defend against Palpatine's final attack. Coruscant glitters, especially at night, but her glow is fading. The light weakens, and so too does his pain. As evening air rushes past him, his heart starting and failing in fits, shadows wrap around him as a shroud, soft and gentle. For the last time, Mace finds his refuge in the darkness. The end. Reader's notes. This podfic was recorded as an ITPE 2023 gift for Katana Fox Girl. I have something slightly bigger in mind, but I am worried about my time management this year, and I wanted to make sure I got something for you, and I spent quite a lot of time creeping through your bookmarks, and I was like, major character death. Oh, wait, it's Mace. This isn't new. I know how this goes. And then I was like, oh my goodness, this man's inner monologue. All of the Jedi, sassy and amazing and too busy in everybody's noses and everyone's business. And also just, the way that Skyrunner uses light imagery as, like, because it really is so much, like, light is healing, is hopeful, but, like, no, if it's a light-triggered migraine, light is the thing you're avoiding, and it is so good in this to see that sort of imagery flipped on its head, because that's the thing, and, like, anyway, I would not have picked up this fic if not for creeping through Katana Fox Girl's bookmarks, so
Yeah, I just thank you for an excellent rec. I hope you enjoyed my take on it. I had initially planned to take, I had a bunch of sick days left over at the end of the year and planned to take them to record my ITPE, bigger project that I had planned for. And if I don't get it done, I will just, you know, kick it to next year and make it your gift then or something. Anyway, I'd planned to use those days off as recording time. And then I got actually sick. Like, I have a cold. I have snot. It's fucking obnoxious. I had plans for these days. I did not plan to actually be ill. I'm also recording using a new mic headset setup, which is why I think things sound a little differently, but not bad. I'm still working out all the kinks on that, but yeah, anyway, Katana, I hope you enjoyed this. Skyrunner, thank you so much for having blanket permission to Potfic. And everyone else who listened, I hope you enjoyed it too. So yeah, thanks for listening. Have you enjoyed it? Have a nice day.